I've always been a very open person. I've never been ashamed of who I am. I've never been afraid to be myself. I think that's one of the most important things in life, is to be true to yourself. And that's what I've always tried to do. I know that there are a lot of people out there who are struggling with their sexual identity. I want them to know that they are not alone. There are people who love and support them, and that it's okay to be who they are. I'm proud to be gay. I'm proud to be who I am. And I hope that by being open about my sexuality, I can help others to be open about theirs as well. Sir Elton John. Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And I'm very excited to have this guest with me today to share in conversation. This is our final episode of season three. And so we're looking for a wonderful season four coming up, starting the end of next month. So be looking for that. But today I have with me Brian Gorman, who is a gentleman who I just met. And there is so much to unpack in one person out of this man and the work that he does. He is a co-founder of the 4-Day Work Week, which who doesn't need that? And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. He's also a public speaker. He is a life coach. He is... he's a podcaster as well. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And I'm really excited to dig in with you, Brian. Welcome.
Thank you, Henry Cameron. I am excited to be here. And I feel blessed to have met you this morning.
Oh, likewise. Likewise. So you're based in Hoboken.
I am.
Hoboken, New Jersey, right across from New York City. I love Hoboken. Have a lot of happy memories there. I have family who live there. Were you born there?
No, actually, I grew up in Maywood, New Jersey, and Hackensack, New Jersey. So just north of here, and still in suburban New York City.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Tell me a little bit about... One of the things that I was most impressed about you and your biography is your advocacy work for Indigenous rights, for LGBTQIA plus rights, and with a growing dark cloud reemerging over our community globally. I mean, there was just a law that Parliament put through, a bill in Uganda,
yeah,
that makes it illegal for people to even identify as anything other than heterosexual, and under penalty of life in prison or worse.
Yeah.
This is shocking. This is devastating. And it's so much about who you are to help fix these problems in the world. Let's start there. Let's start, jump in with both feet. Tell me a little bit about advocacy work.
So again, I grew up in Maywood, New Jersey, which at the time was 100% Caucasian. The first person of color in my school system was my senior year in high school. And for a lot of reasons, including, I think, the generation of my parents, but also my own not yet acknowledged reality of being a young gay boy, I grew up as an introvert.
Mm.
I also grew up as a Boy Scout and became an Eagle Scout. So at the age of 17, I went off to Syracuse University. I was an introvert. I was an Eagle Scout. And I found myself in this huge multiracial, multiethnic, and often international population. And I had promised myself that I would claim a different identity, if you will, as a freshman. So what would an introverted Eagle Scout do? I joined a fraternity. But I joined Alpha Phi Omega, which is the National Service Fraternity.
I was Alpha Psi Omega. See? Parallel.
Close.
Theater fraternity.
So, not soon after, we had a guest come to one of our meetings looking for volunteers to help establish a Boy Scout troop on the local Onondaga Reservation. And I volunteered. I soon learned that the young men on the reservation didn't really need Boy Scouts. They did need a safe and certainly in the winter, warm place to gather as friends. I also learned very quickly, because I became very engaged in knowing the culture of the people, that the university's portrayal of its mascot, which was a Native American mascot, was both xenophobic and racist. At all the athletic events, there was a fraternity that portrayed in very stereotypical clothing, acting out as if they were, quote, drunken Indians. Mm-hmm. And so even my freshman year, this little introverted Eagle Scout of about 120 pounds at that time started lobbying the university to change its mascot. As the years went on, I began advocating for the creation of a Native American Studies program, the potential that the university might start a scholarship for a local Native American youth to portray the mascot, got some of the fundraisers at the university working with me. We never got it off the ground. It actually took the Onondaga Nation about 10 more years before that change took place. But this thing inside me about making change happen was ignited. And it's been with me ever since.
Where did that come from? Were your parents that way?
Oh, no.
Not to get personal, no. But let's get personal.
No. Not at all. And we can come back to that. But let me fast forward the story based on your question. Mm. Now, again, remember, I was coming of age in the 60s. I remember even before that reading newspaper stories of lynchings. Down south in the 60s, we had a number of race riots. And then the way I tell the story, in 1967, 68, as a freshman, I had to wear a tie to lunch on Sundays in the school cafeterias. As a junior, we shut down the university after the killings at Kent State. So there was an era of defying the institution, if you will. There was a sense of defying the institution that sort of permeated that time. But it was still a psychiatric disorder to acknowledge that one was gay. And so I really thought that if I lived a life as a heterosexual male, I could be a heterosexual male. And it didn't work. And I can still remember that evening in 1981, early 1981, sitting in my home office saying, either I have to find a way to disconnect the life I'm living from who I really am, or I have to bring them together. And so I came out in the spring of 1981.
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own 2 feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ plus support. I can also officiate weddings, end of life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today.
One of the first things that I read in the first, and it was a gay publication at that time, was this new disease that was emerging among gay populations in New York and San Francisco. And it was called GRID, the gay-related immune deficiency.
Right.
And I don't remember exactly when, but not too long after GRID became known as AIDS. I became a board member of a local publication. I was in Minneapolis at the time, and the publication was called Equal Times. And Equal Times was actually a lesbian and gay publication. And we became the primary source of information for the community around AIDS. We hired this incredible lesbian editor who scoured the media. And again, there was no Google back in 1981. But she scoured the media for information. And I would bring Equal Time into my doctor as a source of information for him. So long answer to your short question, I guess, but it's been in my blood ever since.
That's amazing. I came out in 1984, not long after you did. And I remember that time vividly. And I've had so many young LGBTQIA people come up to me and say, it must have been so scary to come out at that time. And they consider us pioneers. We don't hear it very often, but it's out there. And there are those that recognize, you know, we weren't thinking in those terms. We were just living our lives. We were just trying to be free, free Americans, you know?
Yeah.
Land of the free, home of the brave. And it did take a lot of courage. And I applaud you for coming out of that darkness into the light of self-awareness, because, you know, I grew up in a very conservative environment as well, and struggled a lot, and you know, a father who was of the generation who still believed it was a medical disorder, a psychological disorder. You know, I said, Dad, you think I have a psychological disorder? He said, not you, the rest of them. So, you know, we laughed about it, and he endured it because he loved me, and he learned in time to be accepting. I hate the word tolerate. Who wants to be tolerated? It's really about accepting that every single human being is unique. And there are as many ways of expressing your humanity as there are humans to express.
And going back to really how you started this question, I read that same story about Uganda. And in that story, what was interesting, I believe it was an article in the New York Times, they said, going back into the Bible, in the Jewish tradition, they can identify at least 6 different Jewish genders.
Right.
And again, you know, both you and I have some connections with the indigenous populations in North America, at least.
Yeah.
And again, the great recognition of the fact that we don't all fit into one of two boxes.
No culture is a monolith, no group of people. And we have to get past the belief that that's true, which is a really tough thing to do in this time of social media and, you know, misinformation. How do we, as I think it's safe to say we're both in our sage years, there's no male equivalent to crone, so I'm thinking sage is the closest I can think of. How do we show by example? I mean, part of it is this conversation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But how do we, and for our listeners out there, we have more than 2,500 listeners in 41 countries. And there may be some young person who is struggling with their self-awareness and trying to navigate that horrible world of labels. My grandmother used to say, honey, labels are for food cans. Human beings are too complex for anybody's label. You label yourself this, that, or the other thing, you're opening up to everyone else's interpretation of what it means to be you. And only you know you. So let your name be label enough. Let them get to know your good name. People should smile when they hear your name. This is my Bronx Jewish, cover her head when she went outdoors, kosher home, Jewish grandmother.
How beautiful.
And in 1984, to have that be her response to grandma, I'm gay? What? And then she leaned into the phone. She said, you know, I used to hang out with the lesbians in Greenwich Village in 1932. We used to go out, listen to jazz, eat pig's feet, and drink beer. The pig's feet? You? When in Rome, if you know what I mean. Grandma! Who knew? But there was no word homosexual at that time. There was no, it was just people being people.
Yeah.
And yes, there were people who were marginalized, and it was not a safe environment. It was safer in some parts of the world, some parts of the country, to be who you were. But I did not expect my crone Jewish bubble bubby to come back at me with that response. She was the one I was scaredest to tell.
Mm.
My mother was first, and her response was, oh, are you any different than you were yesterday? I said, no. She said, I don't love you any differently than I did yesterday. Are you safe? Are you happy? I said, yeah. She said, stay that way. If you want to introduce me to somebody, great. Meanwhile, have fun, be safe, be happy. You know, my father was the next call. Another nail in my coffin! Literally thought I was trying to kill him. But then we worked through it, right? And then that third call was to my grandparents, because that was the scariest for me. And it turned out not to be so scary. Not to be so scary. And so to be able to share these stories from a very scary time, because nobody knew what AIDS was. It was it was called the gay cancer. They were still calling it the gay cancer. And we lost so many of our heroes and so many of our advocates and so many of our artists.
Friends and partners.
Partners, of course. Yeah. So that's my next question, I guess, is how do we as sages help?
I think for me, and I want to go into another part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, I received an email, and it basically said, I am a gay teenager, sophomore in high school in suburban Boston, studying photography. Our assignment is to write the biography and photograph in the style of our favorite photographer. I Googled gay photographers and you are my favorite. May I interview you? Henry wow. Cameron, my ego said yes.
Wow, he's a photographer too, but can you cook?
No. But this young man can.
Okay.
It was my ego that said yes. And I got on the phone with Brandon, and the first thing that struck me was how much homework he had done and how well thought out his questions were. And then he asked me one question. He said, how did you come to your photography? And I explained to him that my first partner in Minneapolis was an artist who paid the bills by working in a photo lab. And David tried to teach me how to draw for the 6 years we were together. And I never got very far. And when our relationship ended, we stayed friends. And when I was moving to New York City, he said, you know, you really should buy yourself a good camera. And I did. And I became passionate about my photography. And then I said to Brandon, and how did you come to your photography? And he said, it's a way to see a world outside the abuse I experience at home every day and the assaults I suffer at school on a regular basis. When we got done with the interview, it wasn't my ego that spoke. It was my heart. I couldn't say, I hope you get a good grade.
Right.
I said, stay in touch if you want. I made the offer, not the expectation, not the command. And he did stay in touch. And a few months later, his mother threw him out for the first time. And he spent that summer between his sophomore and junior years on the streets of Boston during the day and sofa surfing at night. And would spend time at night before he could crash, just talking on the phone. And his mother took him back in when school started, and the abuse at school became really bad. People would simulate raping him, and they'd stand around the flagpole and this was a public school in suburban Boston area. They'd stand around the flagpole praying for him before school. Teachers would ask him if he's ever going to get better. He was on one of the sports clubs, and the team would make him change in the female locker room.
What year was this?
This was 14 years ago.
Wow. Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups, virtual or in-person book club meetings. For further information, go to psychologyprofessorandminister.com. Unconscionable.
Yeah. And ultimately, the school banned him. Their way of addressing the problem was saying, Brandon, you are no longer allowed on school grounds. We will send teachers to tutor you at the public library. And so clearly his home environment was not very welcoming. The school was not very welcoming. And so I began to talk with his mother. He began to work with his tutors. And what happened was he would get all of a month's tutoring done in 3 weeks. And then he would come down and stay with me for a week. And at his mother's request, I helped him prepare for his SATs and college applications and scholarship applications. I took them on campus visits. And then March 7th of 2011, I got a text message. And it said, "My mother just told me I have 3 hours to get out of the house. What do I do?" Well, my first response was, F the rules. Because the rule was he couldn't use daytime minutes. At that time, there were limits on how many minutes you could use on the day, a cell phone during the day, or you'd have to pay extra. So mm-hmm. F the rules, call me. So he called me. I told him, you know, if you can get your birth certificate, get your social security card, get your medications, et cetera, et cetera. Have your boyfriend meet you, because his boyfriend drove, he didn't. But don't have him meet you at the apartment, have him meet you at another location. You take a taxi there, have him call me so that I can work with him to find a place for you to stay tonight. And I canceled the business trip I was supposed to take the next day. I rented a car and I drove up there. And the next day I went into his school district. Now, this was his senior year. We're in his senior year. His school district was actually paying another school district 20 miles away to educate him. So I went with him in to meet his guidance counselor. And she said, "You have to find a place for him to live here in the school district, or he's not going to be able to graduate in 3 months." So here I am driving around in a very conservative blue-collar town in Massachusetts, basically saying, I live in New Jersey and I'm looking for a place for an 18-year-old who just got thrown out of his home to live for the next 3 months. I found a studio apartment that was about the size of a bathroom, and the owner of the complex asked me every illegal question. And it was like, do I say, you know, you can't ask that? Or do I give him the honest answers? So I gave him the honest answers, and he said, I want to meet Brandon. So I picked up Brandon after school, and I said, look, this is what it's going to be like. And Brandon and I sat down at this guy's kitchen table, and he asked Brandon every illegal question. And at the end, he said, just one rule. If any of my residents ever complain about you kissing your boyfriend in the parking lot, you're out of here. And so we moved Brandon in, furnished with like a card table and chairs and an inflatable bed, until he could graduate from high school. And then he moved down here with me. Brandon ultimately graduated from the new school with a 3.9 GPA. He's now working on his master's degree in social work.
Fantastic.
But to your point of what do we do, from his first visit here, I started sharing our history. You remember all of those movies, Longtime Companion and so forth and so on. Yeah. Started sharing our history with Brandon, because it's important to know where you came from.
That's
and
true.
So I think part of what we can do is share our history. Part of what we can do, have a good friend whose tagline is the gay leadership dude. We can be courageous and authentic about who we are. Steve Iacovelli, the gay leadership dude, wrote a book, Pride Leadership. And in it, he talks about all of the aspects of the, as he pronounces it, LGBTQ plus community, that make us good leaders. It takes courage to come out. Coming out is an act of authenticity. And so forth and so on. I think one of the things we can do is be role models, to not be silent, in the face of oppression and opposition, but to really speak up.
Yeah. And not wait for people to come around and ask. Because very often, most often, they don't. And this has nothing to do with sexuality. This has everything to do with the human condition, the universal human condition. And that's why I started this podcast, the Lost Traveler Podcast, because we are all lost travelers in our way. We're on the journey together. And we all have this opportunity, as you so beautifully expressed it, to be, for lack of a better word, an angel on the path, guiding someone, strengthening by example. We can't tell someone who to be or what to do or how to. I mean, this whole concept of grooming young people to become homosexual is so passé and was always ridiculous to me.
I was groomed to be a heterosexual and it didn't work.
Weren't we all? Isn't that the point? Right? None of this argument makes sense. And I know for a fact, it's well documented, that this whole anti-LGBT movement in Uganda, and I'm sure globally, has been funded by extreme evangelist groups from America. I'm looking right now, sitting, because I'm particularly interested in this, what's unfolding in Uganda, because I've been mentoring a young man for the better part of a year who is a single father of three children himself, but he has essentially adopted 31 children from the slums of Kampala. These are kids who are children of child mothers who were abandoned in the streets. These are children of abuse and poverty and every other inconceivable thing in the West that we don't even know is happening most of the time. He felt like you did. It's just something I have to do. He's 28 years old, the year my son would be now had he lived. And I wasn't looking for him. He wasn't looking for me. He was reaching out globally with his mobile phone, because that's all he has, looking for early childhood educators to help him serve these children. Because he was not an educator. He's a farmer from a small village, a small polygamous village in the countryside outside of Kampala. And we were talking about this bill just the other day, and he said, you know, I'm really conflicted because I have a very close friend who has now been imprisoned for protesting this bill. His family, his friends can do nothing to help him because guilt by association. The bill covers people who are allies and in any way associated with homosexuals or people who identify that way. Yeah. And he said, I would stand to lose everything that I've worked for, and these children would be back in the slums on the streets. And I said, you are shepherding the next generation. You're teaching them better than they would have been otherwise. I'm sure they're getting it in school. I'm sure they're getting it in church. You know, Uganda is a very evangelical Christian world. And mm-hmm. many of these childcare organizations are scams that are run, many of them, by evangelical churches. And the pastors are living in big houses, driving big cars, fat and happy, while the children that they're supposed to be helping are literally starving.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine up in Gloucester, Massachusetts, where I was before I came to Europe, reached out to me and said, Henry, this kid from Uganda I think could really use a mentor right now, and I think you're it. So I reached out to Bugingo, and it was an instant connection. I guided him to incorporate legally as an organization. And I said, when you do that, I'll build you a website. And we'll go from there. We'll start telling your story. And we'll see what we can do. And that was, I think we got that done last August. And now 28 of those 31 kids are living in the countryside, out of the slums. They're all out of the slums now. The other ones have to stay in school in the city until they're finished. And he's living in the city and he's back and forth. His mom has a small house out in the country and she takes care of most of the kids. And she's got a husband with dementia on top of it that she's caring for. These people are heroic. But like you and like me and like so many other people, they feel the impulse to be helpers in this lost world or in this world of lost humans. And I agree with you that telling our stories, reflecting back what's possible, is it helps build a solid foundation that might not otherwise have been there. Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Childcare is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
Yeah, I think what's important in the story you're telling is some of us have the opportunity to stand on the soapbox, if you will, and tell our stories broadly. And that's important. For some of us, the best way to tell our stories is one-on-one.
Yep.
And that's also important. What's important is we're telling our stories.
Yeah.
What's important is people are knowing us as people, not as labels.
That's right. There was something came across my feed this week about the first made-for-TV movie back in, I want to say, 1972 that addressed homosexuality in a humane and real way. They had to navigate Hollywood at that time. They had to navigate, well, there has to be somebody who's against it because you have to represent those voices too. You know, there can be no touching. There can be no loving glances between the two men who are at the center of the story. Hal Holbrook?
Yes.
Was in it. And who was the other one? You know, after I hit 50, names go right out of my head. Martin Sheen was the other one. Look it up. But it was 1972. And there was a lot of fear around this being a historically important piece, which everyone knew it was, even with all the parameters around it, all the you can'ts and you shouldn'ts and you mustn'ts. And they sat back and waited for the response. And it was either the second or third most watched thing nationally, up against big, big things. And they were flooded with calls. They got hundreds of calls, but most of them were good. Most of them were positive. And it was because these were just two men who happened to love each other. And one of them was divorced from a woman, and his son had to discover who his father really was. He could no longer live that lie. I was married to a woman. I was married to a man. Both.
I was married to a woman, never to a man.
It's, you know, marriage, any relationship is difficult. I haven't met one person who has told me it's easy. It's nothing. Relationships, period. Doesn't matter who you love. Relationships are hard work. They require mutual respect, trust, and communication, healthy communication.
Yeah.
To survive, you know?
What do you think has been the most important catalyst for you in any part of your life journey?
I think becoming a parent. I always wanted to be. I always somehow knew I would be. My partner at the time, who was Cameron's mother, never wanted children, never saw herself as being a mother, did not have that thing that some women have and some women don't have, that gives them a natural sense of parenting. Emotionally ill-equipped to handle it. And so I happily took the brunt of the parenting responsibility in our family. It's not that she didn't love him. Of course she loved him. But she could not really be a parent to him in the way that he needed. And so as somebody who did not have the parents in my foundation years that I really needed, not until much later did we find that. Thank goodness we did. After a lot of hard work, a lot of ups and downs, I got to be both father and mother to him, which I was capable of. Because, you know, I grew up all over the world. My father was a cultural diplomat for the US government. And so I saw the whole spectrum of humanity paraded across my doorstep on a daily basis. My education, unlike yours, was surrounded by people of every shade, every religion, every cultural background imaginable, because I attended the international schools in Austria and Soviet Union, Peru, Brazil, Cuba. It was just an amazing influence in my journey. I think that would be the other thing, was that I had a very unique foundation and a rare one. I knew what a drag queen was when I was in the fourth grade. Of course, I was in Brazil, Carnival, man, you know. Crazy. I'll write a memoir someday, but but I was afforded a window into humanity that is rare. Unless you grow up the way I did, which there are many what we call diplo brats out there. Shout out to my peeps. Also, you know, people in the military who grow up traveling globally or in different parts of the country with their families, which my mother came from that world. My father was born in the Bronx. You know, conservative Jewish parents, they moved to the DC area, and he got into the Foreign Service in USIA. And so I think those are the two key factors in terms of influencing that were pivotal for me. Also learning the word integrity at age 14. That was pivotal, pivotal, pivotal for me. And this is a really good segue. As my father was driving me to college, university, we weren't particularly close at the time. I was not out yet. So that tension, which I'm sure you're familiar with, was there. Yeah. And what was, you know, you're stuck in a car for 3 hours with your dad. You got to talk about something, right? So I asked him, Dad, do you like what you do? Because the question for me at that time was, does the career path you choose affect who you become as an adult? This is what was pressing on my mind as I was heading to university. And I said, Dad, do you like what you do? And he said, I loathe it. Not L-O-V-E, L-O-A-T-H-E, which is a searing hate. And I said, well, why do you do it if you hate it so much? He said, well, son, that's the price you pay. When you want to meet your parents' expectations, want them to be proud of you, if you want to see something of the world, raise a family, have money in the bank. I'm thinking, wow, he sold his soul. And it explained a lot about his character. Not that he was a bad person, but he was a complicated person and very angry and sad a lot of the time. And felt the world owed him something. You know, he was very bitter about all that. And I asked him, I said, Dad, why do you do it? You know, and that was his answer. And I said, what did you want to be when you were my age or younger? What was your dream? And he had forgotten. He was only in his mid-40s. We drove along in silence for about 20 minutes, and then big tears started streaming down his cheeks. I had never in my life seen my father cry. I said, what's the matter? Did I say something wrong? He said, no, it's okay. I said, what is it? He said, I just remembered. I wanted to be a photojournalist for National Geographic.
Wow.
And in my mind, I thought, damn, you could have done that. And your parents would have been so proud of you. And you would have traveled the world, had money in a bank, raised your kids. Well, all the things that were a measure of success for him in his youth, he could have achieved had he had the self-awareness to lay out that path before himself.
And the courage.
And the courage. And that was really, that was a hugely pivotal moment for me, because that gave me that moment of my father coming out to me in that way. I mean, it was a coming out. It gave me the courage then to have the conversation with him later. It taught me in that moment. It gave me an opportunity to make a contract with myself that I would never have that conversation with my children. And I think that's my proudest thing as a parent, is that Cameron lived his lifetime of 13 years seeing me fulfill that contract, which I'm still doing today.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blase blase means to tell your story.
Your generous sponsorship and individual support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a charitable project under the fiscal sponsorship of United Charitable, a nonprofit 501c3 organization. The Lost Travelers Club focuses primarily on the needs of parents who have outlived their beloved children. We recently launched our new Brain Candy Project Wing, providing art supplies to children still struggling with critical or terminal health-related conditions. We hope to raise enough funds to launch Brain Candy, an arts and literature magazine created by and for these young people. Find out more at www.braincandy.online. Thank you. So let's talk about career. Let's talk about that question of, does the career path that you choose for yourself affect who you become?
I want to come back to a few things you said first, because I don't think I said it earlier. I adopted Brandon. Brandon is now my son.
Right, that's beautiful.
So I did become a parent of a 21-year-old.
And I think before he was 21, you started being his parent.
And that was certainly one of the pivotal moments in my life, because I have learned from Brandon that unconditional love is real.
Yes.
I had never experienced that before in my life. I remember my grandfather was a pharmacist. He had Gorman Drug in Hackensack, New Jersey. My father became a pharmacist. My father was the oldest of three sons. He ended up buying the drugstore for my grandfather to really force my grandfather into retirement because his health was failing. My father worked 7 days a week. He couldn't afford to hire another pharmacist. It was him for much of my life. My grandmother was the sales clerk, if you will. My father's aunt was the bookkeeper. My mother was a cosmetician. In seventh grade, I became the delivery boy. And I remember we'd go to church on Sundays, and the kids, and then we'd go back to the drugstore. And I remember there was a doctor and his family, his wife, that would come in every Sunday morning and have conversations with my father. And as my brother and I were getting close to going away to college, I remember one conversation where the doctor said, "So are you helping your children go to college?" And my father said, "As long as they don't become pharmacists." Very much like that moment in the car with your father.
It
that stays with me 50 some years later. Henry Cameron, one of the first questions I ask my clients when they begin to talk about career change, anything around how do I earn a living, if you will, is what makes your heart sing? I believe we all deserve to find passion and joy in the work that we do. Because if we don't, I don't think we find passion or joy in much else in life either. And so much of that is how we define and find purpose in what we do. There's a very fascinating study of custodians in a hospital, some of whom define their job as cleaning the rooms and filling the soap dispensers. And then there were those who said, "I'm an ambassador for the hospital. I'm here to ensure that these patients have the cleanest environment in which to heal." There were those who would take their full shift to do their job. And then there were those who would do their job much more swiftly and then spend time sitting and talking with patients who didn't have, they observed never had any visitors. The job description was the same. The purpose in with which people were doing that job was different. So does your choice of career? Yes, it makes a big difference. My brother graduated in 1969, went to work for an employer, and he actually was forced into early retirement, but he retired from that company. My sister had two employers her entire career, one of them twice, but just two employers. I don't know how many employers I've had in different careers. And my father would always say, when are you going to get a real job? Every one of them was real to me.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Every one of them was fulfilling.
Balance, pain mitigation, range of motion, athletic performance, focus, memory, immune system support, and REM level of sleep, all this and more made possible affordably with no pharmaceuticals, no injections, or invasive treatments. Just socks, insoles, and patches made stronger with the tactile patterning of Vox Life products. Scientifically proven to work and guaranteed. Now in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Visit www.dianedinkmeyer.voxlife.com. That's Vox, V-O-X-X, Life. You'll be glad you did. We're multifaceted. We're multifaceted beings. And to try and stuff ourselves into a box, you know, is just, again, passé. You know, I've been an educator in the Waldorf education movement for a number of years, and it's foundational to the creative work that I'm doing now in the theater, exploring through theater and art the dance across the threshold between the human physical and the human spiritual. That's my work. That's why I'm here in Spain. That's what I'm doing here. Isn't that amazing? And it's all because of that conversation with my father. Mm-hmm. Also learning integrity at 14. I can't believe it's been an hour.
Yeah.
I could go on for another hour with you. We're going to have to do a part two sometime.
Absolutely. I'm on.
I'm going to start something new in my season four. For the last three seasons, I feel like it's a full circle moment. There's a power in the number three. And now that I'm wrapping up this third season, and thank you for being my final guest of my third season. This was very, very special and so much wisdom pouring out of you. We didn't even begin to spelunk the depths that you have within you. The last three seasons, I've asked my co-hosts each episode to leave our listeners with three tools from your kit that they might walk away with and try in their own kit. But I'm going to do something different now, because after three seasons, there's a lot of tools that are already there. There are many more to be acquired, but hopefully if listeners will go back and listen to the first three seasons, they'll at least figure out how to start collecting tools on their own. That's what teach them to fish, right? Yeah. So now I'm going to ask my co-hosts to come up with a question for the next guest, much like I asked you that question about, does the career path you choose affect who you become? That was your question that came out of me. So what question, no matter who the next guest is, no matter what their expertise or their life journey, what's your question for them that I can share?
I already shared it. What makes your heart sing?
What makes your heart sing? Noted. And I will begin season four with that question. How do we find you? I'll put your links in the description.
I am. My website is transforminglives.coach. I am Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at transforminglives.coach. You can also find me at LinkedIn.
At LinkedIn. Well, I will find you all those places. And thank you for this golden hour.
Henry Cameron, it's a gift to have met you today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Very much the same way, brother. We'll talk again soon. I have a feeling like the end of Casablanca. Louis, this is the start of a beautiful friendship.
I feel the same. Thank you.
That's great.
You've been listening to Season 3 of the Lost Traveler Podcast with your host, Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at www.henryallen.org. Thank you to all my guests, and thank you to my listeners all around the world. I couldn't do this without your support. Let's keep striving for a better world together.